Welcome to the flyfisher.co.za podcasts. I have more than just a privilege and a pleasure. I'm sitting on the deck at Algra, and we're overlooking the Vaal. You might hear the noises in the background and the kids playing up on the grass behind us. And I've got Turner sitting in front of me. You doing all right, Turner?
I'm fine, but...
Turner, you've been fishing for a while. How did you get into it?
It's actually interesting. I'm a keen hunter and so forth. I used to work in a gun shop at a bit of a fly fishing and fishing sort of side to it. I sort of got interested in all these flies hanging on the, in the wall.
Yeah.
After a while, chatting to some of the reps, I actually scored a couple of flies. They were horrible, bloody butchers, and a selection of flies on about size 8 hooks. Yeah, I managed to scrounge around for a rod and line, and started teaching myself to cast. And then at one stage, with the Adler Club in Bloemfontein, joined them, and then went on a trip to the old Swartwater.
Yeah.
And managed to hook a couple of yellows, and that was sort of the start of it. And we're talking about the 80s, 81, yeah. 1981, yeah.
Now, how did you get into fishing stackies? Because I know you spent a bit of time on there.
Yeah, look, after a few years in Bloem, accepted a position in Bethlehem.
Yeah.
Got in touch with a couple of interesting characters in Harry Smithfield, notably Dennis de Klerk and Hans van Sail, the good doctor. And Dennis was kind enough, they were sort of the pioneers of fly fishing on Starkeys. And he was kind enough, he had a boat back then, and he invited me. The first couple of times I hit Starkeys, the only place you can sort of walk the bank is that eastern bank.
Yeah.
And you get those westerlies blowing straight into you.
In your face.
And I was battling away with waves that sort of hit me around the armpits, and then old Dennis, I bumped into him at a club meeting. I was with Maluti. And Dennis offered to take me out, and I went out once or twice with him. The rest is history.
And that was, what, early 90s?
Sort of 93, I would say.
Okay. But you spent time out there, so you fished that Swartwater, Figapatsu, which you dragged me off to.
Yeah.
I must say, last time I was at Figapatsu, I got myself a seriously good fish there. Just under 4 kilos, but beautiful fish.
That's a fantastic. I mean, Figa's a wonderful venue. Unfortunately, from time to time, because the primary water source for the whole of it is from time to time, water levels get really low, and then the water quality is poor. Plus, there's no control. A lot of fish are being netted, and gill netting. I've seen gill netting taking place there.
Yeah.
It's a sad situation. But there's a good head of nice trout in there as well, eh?
Yeah, they are good fish. But you've been on this piece of water for many years. When did you start fishing Algra?
Probably 86, 87, if I, off the cuff, around about there. That's when I started fishing Algra. And it's always been one of my favourite spots.
Yeah, I like the back of your hand, I believe.
No. Pretty well.
So, a little bit of... technique and tips for this kind of water. I know you're not a short line nympher, you prefer truck and trailer.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you one thing. With the check nymphing, I'll check the other guys, they can nymph, I prefer the what you call truck and trailer or the New Zealand rig. I just get a huge kick out of making a good presentation, a nice cast with a good presentation, and reaping the rewards afterwards.
Yeah.
And that's what fly fishing is all about to me, is actually making those nice, delicate presentations and sometimes long casts with a proper presentation. That's what I love doing.
Now, when I got you, I was watching you fishing a little upstream, and then you came down the bottom with some dry fly. Give us some pointers on dry fly, especially for smallmouth.
A lot of people, ask me, do I often fish dry fly for smallies? I don't. I'll switch to the dry when there is a lot of activity on the top.
Mm-hmm.
If I see a lot of activity, notably fish sort of hanging and keeping station and feeding off the top, then I'm first to jump on a dry.
Mm-hmm.
And I love fishing the dry. But, with the odd fish rising here and there, I'd rather stick to a nice big nymph or or a caddis with a trailing nymph about a size 14. I just believe that's, you know, I like to get big fish.
Mm-hmm.
I hate hanging around with sort of 14 to 16 inches. I like them a bit bigger than that. And I adjust my tactics accordingly.
Okay, so you said big caddis. What are you talking there?
I'm talking the caddises that we either tie on a size 8 caddis hook, but I'm very fond of using the sort of Fonda Marva style hooks.
Yeah.
Mustards are pretty good hooks, eh? But I nowadays use those Simpsons. They're chemically sharpened.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a nice bend in them, and they tie a very nice, well-balanced caddis.
Okay, so about an 8, and then copper?
Yeah, I would say even some of them, what we generally talk about as 6, they've got different numbers. I think that's actually a 12 when you look on the packet.
Okay.
But it's a huge hook for a 12.
Yeah.
It's sort of more of a 6 if you compare it to the caddis hook itself.
Yeah, and then you're putting lead on and bead head on that?
No, I don't put a bead on them.
Yeah.
So I like to, when I tie caddis patterns on those hooks, about 7 or 8 turns of lead,
mm-hmm.
Probably 0.25,
mm-hmm.
And then I like to go to the true caddis shape.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the caddis patterns that we tie on the standard grub hooks or caddis hooks or whatever they're called, where we put a bead in the front, you know, we've got an insect tapering towards the tail. And if you look at the caddis, it's actually the other way around. The abdomen is quite fat, and the thorax and head is actually minute compared to the abdomen.
True.
So when I tie them on those fundamental hooks, I try and imitate the true shape of the caddis.
Fat tail and narrow head.
That's right. Yeah.
And then your point flies, and how far behind are you putting the point fly?
I actually fish quite short. I know a lot of guys go up to half a meter apart and things like that. You know, I'm looking at 12 inches.
Mm-hmm.
12 inches between the point and the dropper. And the reason for that is, at one stage, we were fishing and getting a lot of fish that were foul hooked.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, what are we doing wrong? And then one day, I actually realized that these fish were all caught in the mouth, the top fly, and then the point actually hooked into the tail or something, and as the body goes straight,
put pressure,
it actually almost acts like a catch and release tool.
Mm-hmm.
And the fly that's in the mouth is actually pulled out, and then suddenly you've got a fish that's foul hooked. And I actually realized that when, you know, a couple of times I'd hook a fish and you are well in control and you're able to steer it this way and that, and the next one sort of kick on the line. And suddenly you're completely out of control, and you can't direct the fish, you can't sort of muscle it into any direction. You obviously realize that the fish has been fouled.
Okay.
And whereas just previously you had control.
Yeah.
And then I sort of realized that, and I shortened that distance between the two flies, and resulting that I'd hardly ever get fouled fish. But this weekend I've got two again, so you never know.
What are you putting on the point? PTNs?
I very seldom fish a PTN, strange enough. I mean, it's a wonderful fly.
Yeah.
But, I honestly can't remember when I developed my version of the Gold Rebezia. Basically, when did Gary Borger's presentation come out? I think sort of 87, 88?
Yeah, I got my hands on 89.
Yeah, right about there. And he's got a fish, a fly that's called the hair leg nymph.
Yeah.
And I sort of borrowed some ideas there, and I dropped the wing case. And I thought, if I tie it that way with a bead in the top, I can actually tie this fly very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing. I wanted something that could imitate a Gold Rebezia, or whatever a Gold Rebezia imitates, little mayflies and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that. That's what I was sort of striving towards. And something that I could tie quickly. I can tie that fly in 3 minutes flat.
Sure.
It just works. I've caught all 9 yellowfish species on it.
Mm-hmm.
taken some really big largies on it.
Shit.
I've taken very good Clan William on it. And it's always been a killer for smallies. I mean, this weekend, as soon as I swapped, changed to that helix pattern of mine, I'm into the fish.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, what it's all about is, the tail. I dropped the guardies or the squirrel. I'd rather put a bit of say, 5 or 7 cockackle barbs in there.
Mm-hmm.
Try and keep the abdomen quite slim.
Mm-hmm.
Standard hairs ear dubbing. Or hair's dubbing, not mask, it's a normal hair body,
mm-hmm.
Nice fine dubbing, but I put in there natural colour, and then about 2 shades darker, I put a thorax from Squirrel, and I just dubbing loop behind about a 2.5 mil bead on a size 14 hook, and that's 90% of the time I'm fishing that.
You say behind a 2.5 mil bead, are you putting another weight in there? No,
well, maybe 2-3 turns of lead.
Just for, to build the...
Yeah, Starkey's, I fish that fly on its own.
Yeah.
Just the single fly. And then I put about 7 turns of lead.
Okay.
7 turns of lead behind that. But that's about a 0.15 or maybe 0.2 lead.
Okay.
A medium to a small lead.
What are you ribbing that with?
I started off ribbing it with V-rib material.
Mm.
So sort of that, you get a translucent amber.
Mm-hmm.
Which is still a fantastic if you can get the very thin small one, but lately I've just been ribbing it with copper.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You've fished. You just mentioned all 9 species, so let's touch on a few of those species. Smallmouth, we can understand. Largemouth. Where have you caught smallmouth and largemouth?
Yeah. Look, Algra has always been a favourite spot. When I used to live in Joburg, I fished the Lindeke's Drift,
mm-hmm.
that area, quite extensively with Weber.
Mm-hmm.
We had access to to the water there through a friend of Weber's, and we fished it sometimes 3 times a week.
Sure.
It's always been a good spot for me. Waterville's got a very, very, very good sort of soft spot in my heart. There's some very good big fish in Waterville there.
Mm-hmm.
So I love fishing there. Lately, Kimberley area, the Rit, is closer to home. And the Rit and the Vaal in Kimberley area is incredibly clear,
mm.
with a very large percentage of largemouth being taken while you're fishing. So, I enjoy that. And then, as of late, I've been hanging around Funnacliff, fishing Funnacliff a little bit. Really good fish. Difficult venue because of the fluctuations in flow. I mean, sort of in 20 minutes that river, right when they open the turbines, so they rise at literally 1.5 to 2 meters.
Sure.
I mean, that's like from 16, in fact, from about 1 cubic meter per second, because there's hardly any flow when they shut it down, to like probably in the region of 400
sure.
in no time.
Sure.
So. You've got big trouble if you're caught out in the middle.
Yeah.
You've really got to keep your ears peeled for the siren.
And
you move off when it happens.
Okay, so that's largemouth and smallmouth, and then large scale, small scale?
Large scale, small scale, I must say, Crocodile River, sort of between Brits and Tabazimbi, I've always done well on large scale there.
Yeah.
Got a couple of venues there where the fish really, I mean, it's one of the few, very close to Barakulalu.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows Barakulalu. And I've taken some good fish there, and they're sort of keen on the fly. You know, there are a couple of places on that river where you've got sand flats and where I've seen the fish actively hunting for burrowing dragons. So fish a smallish dragon pattern right on the sandbank, give it a twitch, and I tell you, it's almost like bone fishing on the flats. It's absolutely unbelievable. And because they're so shallow there, you know, that first run to deep water is always a powerful affair, and you really have to know what you're doing to keep them at bay. So lovely, lovely fishing that area, and that probably is my favourite large scale spot.
I just want to touch on that. If guys go out there, please be aware that there are certain places where there are flat dogs. There's a flat dog farm just on the other side of Brits, and then the dam just below Brits also full of flat dogs.
Flat dogs, yeah.
So Kitzman and myself had an interesting afternoon one day when we walked along one sandbank and came back later to find it had been taken over by 2 beasts of the river, whereupon we kindly got out and really ran around the back. Okay, where else for largemouth?
All right,
large scale?
Yeah, large scale, probably Loskop Dam. It's also been a favorite venue. Mm. And then, Horst, I try and go visit Horst at least once a year. And he's got his bottom section on the Pongola. It's absolutely awesome. There's some huge, huge, huge large scale there. And they're very keen on taking big flies and so forth. That is also my favorite small scale water because of the chance of really getting a trophy. I mean, the horse has taken a couple of 4, 4.5 kilos. And those are, hogs of fish. They're really big.
Yeah.
I had the privilege to once fish, I fished it twice, Bladerput with Francois in a research project.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an area that's accessible to people in general, but we had an absolutely amazing day for small scale. Mm-hmm. I mean, between myself, Kitzman, and Hester, we probably took over 130 fish in one day. It was absolutely unbelievable. And I got popped off there on a 5-weight with a 2X tip at like 3 times in a row.
Yeah.
Taken to the cleaners completely.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely awesome fish.
Now, mixed into large scale and small scale, papierback, papermouth.
Yeah, I would love to find a decent venue for papermouth. Yeah, unfortunately, not living close to that area anymore.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I picked one up and I lost it at the boat in Bladerport.
Yeah.
With Francia. And then, I managed to get mine just below Loskop.
Okay.
I managed to get mine. But really, not something that you find reasonable sized fish in. Mm. And as I say, if I can find a decent papermouth venue, I'd love to go there more often. But because of the size, the fish don't really get bigger than 16 inches.
Mm.
You're lucky if you get a 12-incher when you do your 9 species. And as a result of that, probably my least favorite fish of the 9, yellows. Yeah.
So let's move down to the Western Cape. Now, I know that Clan Williams that you got, and I know the story. And I know Hester was 400 meters downstream, and she could hear you screaming.
Look, I love going down for Clan William, and there are two reasons. One, a huge fish, huge challenge, and then secondly, because of the clarity of the water. So they are incredibly difficult to catch, especially Beaverlac, probably one of my favorite spots for them. You're lucky if you see 7 fish a day.
Sure.
So you've got maybe 7 shots at them. That's after you had to walk about 4.5 k's to get the river, and then whatever you walk on the river, and then tonight you've got to walk all of that back again. And to get 7 shots at them, some people might think, hey, you're crazy, but I tell you one thing, once you hook one of those in sort of the 28 inch length, then it's sort of made your year.
So give us a few pointers at those fish. I know they're very tough to take. What are you?
Yeah, look, very different to smallmouth in the sense that the river is different. I think if they were in a river similar to the Vaal, probably would have fished exactly the same way. Them being in the Olifants and in the Doring, very clear, large big pools with short rapids. You're primarily fishing for them in still water.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like largemouth tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And then, woolly buggers are very, very good for them. And then good dragons and damsels. And I would say if you have a good selection of dragons, damsels, and woolly buggers, that's it. Floating lines, longish leaders, stay concealed. Almost like horse fishes in his neck of the woods.
Yeah.
No indicator, just basically almost like streamer fishing.
So you were on the cover of TCFF with quite an awesome beast. Can you still remember the little story that goes behind it?
The largemouth?
That
Clan William.
Mm.
Yeah, look, basically what happened is myself and Hester back then, we were fishing to try and get our 9 species. And we were sort of working up the river, and on advice from Dean and them, we were fishing pretty similar to what we were fishing the Vaal, mm-hmm. fishing those heads, the faster water at the head of the pool and things like that. And Hester was stuck into an area, nymphing with a gold babesia and so forth. And I just walked through the bush basically into the tail out of the next pool, and I was standing there just surveying and checking and seeing what I can see on the river, and the next moment I saw this fish coming down almost right on the bank in about say probably a meter of water, and it came straight at me, and I just froze and I stood right still, and it came almost right to my feet, turned and started going upstream, and I realized this fish didn't see me. At this point, I was actually shouting for Esther to come and join me, and I actually really wanted her to get the first Glen William. Mm. But obviously because of the noise of the river, she couldn't hear me. And yeah, I realized this might be my only chance. I shook off the line, shook out some line, and I made a cast, and the fish turned, started following the fly, and about halfway in, probably 12 yards from me, it inhaled the fly. Turned, I struck, and I was on. Obviously, yeah, I've been known to get verbal and people hearing what I've said many meters away from me, and afterwards I can't remember a word about it. But yeah, so I obviously made myself clear that I was into a fish, and yeah, Hester joined me, took the photographs, and the rest is history. Yeah.
Well, that's one way to pack the cherry on a Glen Williams. I mean, that was a monster fish.
That was a good fish. It's a fish of a lifetime. I doubt whether I'll get another one like that.
Yeah.
I've been privileged to get a few close after that, but nothing, really close to that.
Okay, so moving on to the other species of yellows in the Western Cape.
I love fishing for whitefish.
Mm-hmm.
Just a sad thing that they're actually not as endangered as sawfin is.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many whitefish, but sort of in the vineyard depth, which is a sad situation that they're not in their natural environment anymore. I love to fish for them in their natural environment. No names, no rivers named.
That's fine.
Put it that way. But yeah, there's a small section where you can still find them. And probably about 5 pools that hold fish, and that's literally the only place where you can fish for them in their natural environment. Mm. Crystal clear, difficult fishing. I haven't managed to hook that really nice one. There's a couple of really monsters in there, 6-pound fish and so forth, but mine, probably my biggest, around about a pound and a half,
yeah.
I would say. Lovely to fish for them. I really enjoy that. Sawfin, again, a smallish species. I've taken quite a lot of them, so they don't really blow my hair back. Maybe next time I must go take a one weight or an ought weight and play with that, and maybe I'll have a different approach. But yeah, I like fishing them. They're beautiful fish, yeah. They're lovely fish,
yeah.
And it's nice to get them from time to time. But yeah, the white fish is really intrigues me, and the Glen William is probably my second most favorite fish.
Mm. Well, we're only missing now the one from Natal, so the scaly.
Yes.
But you lived in Pinetown for a little while.
That's correct, yeah.
So you managed to get out and go and get a couple of scalies,
yeah,
every afternoon.
I got quite a few scaly. Very nice fish to go for. Easier to catch than large scale. Very similar to smallmouth, in fact.
Yeah.
Quite large mouths, sort of halfway between a small and a large mouth.
Yeah.
And a good fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the rivers down in Natal's got a good population of stonefly.
Yeah.
So when you go there, stoneflies, here's your variation, slightly bigger, maybe size 12.
Yeah.
It's worked well for me.
Yeah.
A lot of people love fishing for them with bloodworm.
Yeah.
I'm not a great bloodworm enthusiast, but I've been taking them on the Asia.
Okay, so what else have you fished for in Southern Africa, and where else have you been?
I'd try and do a trip to the Delta, Okavango Delta, mm-hmm. for tigers. I've had the privilege to fish, 2 years ago with a couple of mates, John and Enki from Bejan 4x4 Adventures. And, we had a stint where in 3 days between the three of us, we caught over 200 tigers. And it was absolutely unbelievable. And a lot of people say tigers there tend to be on the smallish size. I would beg to differ and say that, the average fish that we got was very close to 3.5 kilos.
Sure.
Forsake the opportunity to fish for the, where the average fish is around about 6 pounds. I mean, that's just awesome fishing.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that the whole experience of going there with a barbel run, experiencing those barbel, that run coming up, the noise, seeing how the birds work, and it's just something that you've got to go to.
Yeah.
It is, you have to go there at least once. You've got to experience it. It is an awesome phenomena. I think, natural phenomenon in Southern Africa.
Yeah, but you're also in Okavango. I mean, there's just so much wildlife around you, and there's just so much happening. I mean,
yeah.
Just getting back to South Africa now, you were down here doing research with a research team at Elgro this weekend.
Yeah, I'm fortunate and privileged that Kobus has asked me to assist, and basically what these guys are doing at the moment is researching the impact of fly fishers on the yellowfish, primarily smallmouth.
Mm-hmm.
That is the one thing, you're catching fish and then they basically time how long you fight it, and then basically they take a blood sample and then put the fish into a tank where it can get down to normal sort of stress levels.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of the stress levels rather, and then they take blood and they can see what the impact is, and then obviously monitoring the fish and seeing whether it will recover properly and things like that. All initial signs are that the fish are actually very robust.
Mm-hmm.
and survive very, very well. They're also going to take these fish and put them in an artificial river system at the Varsity.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to see what they're doing and how they go about spawning and all of that. So, yeah, we got one female that was actually ripe for spawning.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the water temperature is still sort of 19 and so forth. So, interesting. A lot of males are ready to spawn.
Yeah.
So the big spawn in the Vaal is probably going to be in the next 2 weeks. And, I just hope that, we've got a huge impact on the Vaal nowadays. A lot of fly fishers walking the stream and stuff like that. And it's just my hope that everybody would take notice and actually stay off the spawning beds, at least for the big spawn, that sort of early October.
Yeah.
The first 2 weeks, 3 weeks of October, I think that's the critical 3 weeks in the spawning. They are multiple spawners. They will come back and spawn later. But, I think the impact is not as big as now. This big spawn that takes place. Everybody used to say that after the first rains. But, sort of first 3 weeks of October is always a big spawning event on the Vaal.
Looking at the time moving on, and us just your thoughts on that. Is it a good idea to shut the river down for those 2 or 3 weeks and just time it right and just say, sorry guys, don't go fishing?
Well, my personal opinion is it's not necessary yet, but if the guys are going to misbehave, then maybe we'll have to look at it in future years. At this point in time, I believe that responsible bank owners, Elgro started doing it this, they're going to do it from this year. The main spawning areas they're going to actually camp off.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Yendakale is doing it. They sort of demarcating the spawning beds and asking the people to stay off it.
Yeah.
So I think if we've got responsible landowners doing that type of thing, it's not going to be necessary to do it, because the rest of the fishing, the rest of the pools and stuff like that, and getting some really good fish, I don't think it's critical at this point in time.
I think the females drop off the beds and go into really deep water where we're not going to really get them in summer. Okay, moving on to the quickfire favourites, favourite dry fly.
I would go with the Klipspringer caddis. We should actually rename it now. It was my version of the Elke caddis.
Mm.
I started tying it with Klipspringer and dropping the hackle. It was purely an accident one evening at Sterkfontein. It was so late and the fish were nailing the Elke caddis, and I forgot to put the hackles on. And the next day they were actually working better than the Elke caddis. So, maybe we should rename them, because I have been tying them with elk body hair again.
Mm-hmm.
Klipspringer being very difficult to get hold of and so forth. But it's a simple, easy, quick to tie dry fly that imitates everything from a little hopper to a caddis.
Yeah.
Emerging mayfly, the whole toot. And, you saw me fishing dry this afternoon. One guess what I was using. So.
I think we got your favorite nymph.
Yeah, that hair leg variation of mine. Yeah, I love fishing that fly.
Your favorite rod?
I fish 5-weight sage. I've had it for many years. XD. I have had the privilege to cast a lot of the sort of successes of the rod that I've got. The XD is now not even made anymore. And I still haven't found another rod that can cast like that.
Mm-hmm.
It just perfectly suits my casting style.
Yeah.
And I love fishing it. Of late, and all my saltwater rods are Temple Forks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wonderful rods, eh?
Favorite species?
If I had more opportunity to hunt Clan William, it would have been Clan William.
Yeah.
But I would go with smallmouth. Smallmouth being, available to me, close to home, in good sizes and so forth. So smallies. followed by largies, followed by Cam William.
Okay, technique?
Yeah, truck and trailer, nymphing.
Yeah,
probably.
Favorite gadget or gizmo?
Hey, I'm not a big gadget or gizmo oak, I think. You know, I try and keep it simple. Yeah, gadget, probably a waterproof fly box.
Sure, that's not a bad one.
I think that's critical because I had to throw about a grand worth of flies a couple of years ago. It was a few years ago. And ever since, I've been using waterproof fly boxes and I've never looked back.
Yeah.
You can't go without it.
Okay, so let's go all expenses paid anywhere in the world.
I'd love to go. I'd love to go to St. Joe's.
Yeah.
St. Joe's Athol in the Seychelles.
Yeah.
Love to do that. Yeah.
Thank you, Turner. I think you've given us some really good info. I think the guys will learn something, which is always good.
Mark, thanks for your time.
Appreciate it.
It was good having a cool year with you on the deck. And thanks for coming out and thinking that it's worthwhile having a chat to me.
They say you know life is given, but I tell you now, it's all within that river. You find yourself in the heart of heaven. Close off so long, you could swim forever. One place to rest your grace, the silver sands lead the way. The water's golden, stories told, free clouds, sapphire summer days. Fun way to spend your day, take yourself deep right away. Drive 6 hours and walk 5 days. Hey, hey, hey.